Breaking news on WTOP.
Good morning, I'm Mike Moss.
And I'm Joan Jones.
We have a developing story that we are following for you this morning, a significant and serious one at that. There's been a shooting in Alexandria in the Delray neighborhood. This occurred at a softball practice where several members of Congress were on a field near the Delray neighborhood. Now, several people apparently have been struck. WTOP's Nick Iannelli is on the scene there. Nick, can you tell us what you have learned since your arrival?
Well, what we're seeing here is that the shooting actually happened in a field near the YMCA and near a dog park. And people who live over here where the media is gathered, they say they heard shots. There was a man who was tending to his lawn talking to reporters just a moment ago. He was saying, yes, I heard shots. It was almost like a fireworks or perhaps a transformer blowing. He described it as pop, 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 that kind of thing. Very rapid fire.
Arizona Senator Jeff Flake, he was at the baseball practice when the gunfire began, and he says it quickly became clear that House Majority Whip Steve Scalise had been shot.
Steve dragged himself about 15 yards off of the near second base onto the field, but was laying motionless out there. But I couldn't get to him until the shooting stopped.
Police are going to provide a briefing on the situation. We'll be carrying it live shortly as soon as it begins.
In fact, the briefing's just getting underway in Alexandria. Let's go live to the scene now.
Thank you. We're here today to give you an update on the incident that occurred this morning.
Chief Michael
here in
Brown.
Alexandria. And let me repeat, if I can, some of the facts that we do know at this point. Before I start, though, I want to say that this is an incident is not an active incident. The city is safe.
A harrowing morning for parents who were taking their children to school as this all unfolded.
I heard police, and then I heard more police and more police.
That mother rushed to her school and quickly shoved her two kids in the building.
Their school's on lockdown, so the teachers had the doors open, and we literally just kind of pushed them in the door.
Giving her some peace of mind.
I knew once I got them in school that they were safe there.
While chaos gripped her neighborhood.
It was scary, very scary.
In Alexandria, Nick Iannelli, WTOP News.
Authorities are continuing to investigate the crime, and the assailant has now died from his injuries. Many lives would have been lost if not for the heroic actions of the two Capitol Police officers who took down the gunman despite sustaining gunshot wounds.
President Trump speaking at the White House about the shooting this morning in Alexandria, where members of Congress were having a practice for the congressional baseball game, and the president breaking the news that the shooter was killed this morning. The shooter identified as 66-year-old James Hodgkinson of Belleville, Illinois. He had apparently moved to Alexandria a couple of months ago, but he was killed. We are told, by the way, that Steve Scalise is now out of surgery at MedStar Washington Hospital Center, said to be in stable condition. George Washington University Hospital confirms it received two people from the Alexandria shooting, both said to be in critical condition. We'll continue to keep you updated and bring you developments as soon as we get them.
Absolutely, I have regrets. We lost three lives this weekend.
But Charlottesville Police Chief Al Thomas did not acknowledge any regrets in how his department responded to the rally, which he says turned violent around 11 Saturday morning.
Once the violence erupted, once the plan was altered, we had to quickly transition our officers into their protective gear.
He says it took state and local officers an hour to regain control of the streets.
It was a traumatic weekend for everyone. We're still receiving reports of assaults and additional crimes.
Family, friends, and supporters gathered today to remember the woman killed during protests in Charlottesville Saturday. Heather Heyer's mother says she wants her daughter's death to inspire others to make a difference.
They tried to kill my child to shut her up.
Describing Heather Heyer's caring, compassion, and sense of justice, Mother Susan Breaux.
Well, guess what? You just magnified her.
Inspiring multiple standing ovations, Breaux told those gathered about a blood drive being held in Heyer's name, saying that represents how Heyer touched the world, a legacy, she says, that should spread.
Say to yourself, what can I do to make a difference? And that's how you're going to make my child's death worthwhile.
Angry shouts of shame were directed at Charlottesville's leaders during last night's city council hearing as residents blasted the handling of last weekend's white nationalist rally.
You want to call yourselves the capital of the resistance?
Regular business was quickly scrapped.
The resistance was the medics who saved lives. The resistance are the citizens who are identifying the perpetrators of hate crimes.
And y'all did nothing.
WVIR-TV says at one point the mayor, vice mayor, and council all fled the room while protesters held a banner with the words, "Blood on your hands."
It's 5:11. A bunch of megastars, mostly from the world of music, are in Charlottesville tonight for a free concert organized in response to the violence there last month. WTOP's Michelle Bash is in Charlottesville as well and has this report.
Huge lines are snaking around Scott Stadium here on the campus of the University of Virginia as thousands gather for tonight's show called simply A Concert for Charlottesville. Performers include Dave Matthews Band, Pharrell Williams, Ariana Grande, and Justin Timberlake.
What went wrong leading up to the violent white nationalist rally and counter-protest in Charlottesville back in August? A newly released report may shed some light on the answer to that question.
Charlottesville's preparation for the Unite the Right protest resulted in, quote, a period of lawlessness and tension that threatened the safety of the entire community. The 220-page report was commissioned by the city and headed by former federal prosecutor Tim Hafey. He said the city had but didn't use the legal authority to limit what protesters carried.
The presence of those weapons, those clubs, those sticks, definitely elevated the threat to public safety.
And instead of dump trucks to block intersections, a single officer was positioned at 4th and Market Streets.
She actually gets on the radio and says, "They're being pushed my way. There's no one here to help me."
So the officer was pulled from the post, leaving only a wooden sawhorse, which James Fields allegedly drove around and sped into a crowd of counter-protesters, killing Heather Heyer.
Get out of here! Leave me alone!
Sir, we've been called here.
I don't care. Get away. This is my shop, and I don't want you here.
Okay.
Leave me alone. I'm telling you, leave me alone.
We just finished running through a de-escalation scenario, which involved a guy running at us with a knife and a sledgehammer.
We're going to have stock lineup and masters lineup.
On a recent Saturday, in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, 31 kids scrunched into their race cars and rolled swiftly down Constitution Avenue.
When you're going down the hill, it's very exhilarating and your heart rate gets going.
2, 1, go!
Returning champ Molly Schuyler did not disappoint at Z-Burger in Tenley Town. Standing in the sun, she managed to down 21 burgers in 10 minutes.
I was sluggish today. I ate 28 last year, so.
Now, once Fogel gets the deer carcass to this compost site near Mount Airy, he uses a front loader and pitchfork to put it in a big pile of wood chips.
We used to mix it with horse manure, and it gave out more of an odor.
Looks like the voodoo some kids do to make it snow finally worked.
We do like putting our PJs inside out and backwards and put a spoon under our pillow.
They waxed toboggans, grabbed the sleds and coasters, and found a place to slide.
There was a rowdy crowd Tuesday afternoon in Upper Senate Park, and most were in strollers. Hundreds of infants, toddlers, and their parents gathered for the Strolling Thunder Rally, including Jody Lanko from Hazleton, Pennsylvania.
Bryn.
This is Bryn. She just turned 3.
Main Street in Christiansburg, Virginia was shut down so 70 rally cars could line up and take off one by one on the first day of the event. The cars were decked out in racing numbers, sponsor decals, and the logo for a charity that offers help to post 9/11 service members, their families and caregivers, and families of the fallen.
It's like a moving billboard that goes around.
As the Army's old guard fife and drum dazzled the crowd, people smiled, cheered, and many waved handheld American flags.
I'm an immigrant, so it's my first Memorial Day here. So I think everything is beautiful, beautiful. I'm really enchanted to see all those people cheering.
Stone carver Sean Callahan is leveling a Dutchman in his restoration of an unnamed prophet carved back in the 1950s.
They're in a weird spot. You can't really see it from the ground. When you're up in the church, they're in a kind of an obstructed view.
We know that these are Old Testament prophets. There are 16 of them total.
First thing, if you're a greedy pig like I am, is you eyeball as soon as they hit the table which one is the biggest or just has the best claws.
WTOP's Mike McMurdy is the station's program director by day, but come weekend, he's a crab expert.
I've been eating crabs for 30 plus years.
Which has given him plenty of time to refine his picking skills.
Put your knife right under that little Washington Monument and take him off. And that's the very beginning.
They're getting their vaccines, they're getting identified as male or female with their breed, their age, they're getting their flea and tick control, they're getting microchipped.
And Director Cindy Sharpley says they expect to receive more animals from the hurricane zone on Saturday.
We're looking for fosters.
A health crisis led to devastating losses for a woman from Waldorf who almost lost her life. But today she's making a strong comeback with the help from a terror attack survivor. Our Michelle Bash has more on the story.
I always imagined that when I would go into a hospital, it would be to give birth and that I would be leaving with a baby. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that I would be leaving a hospital with one leg and no child to show for it.
In 2014, Katie Feeney and her husband Patrick, a staff sergeant in the Air Force, were expecting their first child when 6 months into her pregnancy, Katie became extremely sick and doctors performed a C-section.
They had to revive me 4 times. I coded 4 times. The first time was for 45 minutes.
They discovered Feeney had a perforated colon, which had led to infection and sepsis.
My heart shut down. My kidneys shut down. My liver shut down.
Feeney went on life support. Tubes were placed in the large arteries in her legs, but there was a problem with one of the tubes, and her right leg had to be amputated. She also lost her unborn baby.
I remember having to be told that my son didn't make it, and I wasn't pregnant anymore, that they had gone ahead and removed him.
Katie wrestled with guilt and thoughts that Patrick deserved better.
I remember sitting in the hospital bed just thinking, you know, I should tell him to file for divorce because he shouldn't have to deal with this. He's young. He has his whole life ahead of him. He should not have to spend the rest of his life taking care of me.
Today, she and her husband are still working through their grief, but things are looking up. Katie is learning to walk with a prosthetic leg at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. That's where Feeney became fast friends with fellow amputee Jessica Kensky, a survivor of the Boston Marathon bombings. And Kensky set up an online donation page to help the Feeneys pay for things like wheelchair-friendly upgrades to their home.
The messages people are leaving on there just completely make my day, and they just make me want to fight to get to my independence.
Link to the donation page and read more at WTOP.com. Search Survivor.
I'm so incredibly lucky to be here, and I don't want to waste a moment of the second chance that I was given.
In Waldorf, Michelle Bash, WTOP News.
Wow, what a story.
Robocalls. Oh, they are annoying.
Yeah.
Seemingly constant. While some of you only get a few robocalls a month, others are getting a lot more, and it's all based on your area code.
WTOP's Megan Cloherty explains in part one of her series, Robo Rage.
Hello, this is Rachel at Cardholder Services.
It's not your imagination. You're getting more robocalls than ever before.
2.4 billion of them every single month. We're committed to trying to stop the flood, but it is a flood right now.
Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai says most Americans get about 8 robocalls a month. But we get more calls in the Washington area than other parts of the country.
I would have expected the 202 to be pretty low, but it's like 17 or 18 calls per person per month on average.
Alex Quisilli is the CEO of UMail, a consumer caller ID caller blocking service which tracks robocalls nationally.
So Seattle averages 2 or 3 per person. The Bay Area averages 2 or 3 per person per month.
But UMail estimates D.C. numbers got 30 robocalls per person in July. While area codes 301 and 703 received about 7 calls per person in the same month. Outside the city, the area codes hit the hardest are 571 and 240, where in just the month of July, callers received more than 15 robocalls.
Your home was selected to receive free wireless security system.
Quisilli's advice, let unknown numbers roll to voicemail. Use call screening services and remain skeptical.
It's good to be paranoid now. There's a really good chance that it's a scammer calling you. I mean, we see sometimes it's up to 50% of the volume of calls coming in are scams.
Head to WTOP.com to learn more about preventing scam calls. Search robocall. Megan Cloherty, WTOP News.
La La Land is up for 14 Oscars on Sunday, including for the song City of Stars. WTOP film critic Jason Fraley went behind the music with the composer, Justin Hurwitz.
We became roommates sophomore year, and he turned me on to these musicals from the 60s, Jacques Demy and Michel Legrand. Huge inspirations for La La Land, as well as the first feature that we made called Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench.
But composer Justin Hurwitz and Harvard roommate writer-director Damien Chazelle couldn't get La La Land off the ground.
Nobody wanted to make a jazz musical. Even once Damien started to get some traction on it, they would say, "And who's doing the music?" And he'd say, "My college roommate." And then that was even more unattractive.
So they had to catch Lionsgate's eye by winning Sundance with Whiplash.
There was all this buzz going around Sundance. Who's this new filmmaker who made Whiplash and what's he gonna do? And as soon as we got that attention, said, "Hey, next project is right here. It's written, the music's written." We had a package ready to go, but Lionsgate just trusted the vision and let us make our dream projects.
Hurwitz joined WTOP from the very piano where he composed much of the music.
Yeah, I basically composed all of it. At the piano that's right next to me.
Oh my God, could you do a little more of that? That was amazing.
The very first material I composed for the movie is the main theme of the movie. As soon as Damien started writing the script, he wanted to know what is the main theme, the thing that we now call me and Sebastian's theme. So that's the...
They then brought in theater duo Benj Pasek and Justin Paul of Dear Evan Hansen to write the lyrics.
Pasek and Paul are just so unbelievably talented.
Let's run through a couple of the songs. Another Day of Sun.
That song was such a beast to compose. By the time I got to the chorus, I was feeling particularly frustrated, and I was just fiddling around on the piano and then came up with...
He was amazed at the commitment by Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone.
Just watching Ryan learn the piano was incredible. There were no hand doubles in the movie. City of Stars duet that they both sing at the piano, that was live, so that was Ryan and Emma.
Look in somebody's eyes to light up the skies, to open the world and send it real. Look at tat tat of my heart.
Favorite lyric, definitely Audition the Fools Who Dream. Starts so specifically with the ant, and yet the song then pivots to being about dreamers in general.
So bring on the rebels, the ripples from pebbles, the painters and poets and plays.
Hurwitz then sticks the landing with the bittersweet finale.
It was meant to just be a demo, you know, the... But Damien got really attached to how it sounded, and he loved the vulnerability in it, so we actually just kept it. I think when we go from that sort of lo-fi mono to the wide stereo, it feels like we're returning to reality. Sebastian sitting at the piano, that is the cut from fantasy to reality, and that's where it sonically changes back.
Hear my full chat with Hurwitz on WTOP.com's entertainment page. I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley.
12:21 now, and let's go live back to the west front of the Capitol. WTOP's Capitol Hill correspondent Dave McConnell with us. Dave, we now have a new president.
We do indeed, and let me quote the last word of Donald Trump's speech. Together we'll make America strong, wealthy, proud, safe. We will make America great again. It's interesting, rain started to fall as President Donald Trump started his speech just a short while ago. It had held off most of the morning, but it certainly failed to dampen the enthusiasm with which the crowd here responded to it.
Breaking news this afternoon as protesters and police clash in downtown D.C. Let's go live to WTOP's Mike Murillo.
As you can hear right there, more pepper spray being fired down here on, we are at K and 12th Street. And that's where the protest crowd has broken up from the original spot at 12th and L and now has moved over. We're following groups. There are groups of people here with bandanas on who are throwing things at the police officers who are in their riot gear. That is prompting the use of pepper spray. I've lost count of how many times they've had to use it down here so far.
Now let's go to WTOP's Kyle Cooper, who has found some of President Trump's biggest fans celebrating the new president.
Bagpipes and cheers as Donald Trump completed the oath of office. People here at 4th in Pennsylvania are part of the pro-Trump group, Bikers for Trump. John Schaefer came from Philadelphia.
I think he's going to be wonderful because he's not a politician. He's for the people.
Some here think the people protesting Mr. Trump today will support him in 4 years because their lives will have improved so much.
WTOP's Megan Cloherty is watching protesters clash with police downtown.
As a police helicopter hovers overhead, police are barricading in a line K Street at 13th Street and opposing a number of protesters that are coming up K Street now. I would put them in the 200 to 300 person range. The bigger crowd is watching all of this happen, climbing the trees in the parks nearby and lining the streets until any of these flashbangs go off and they all retreat. DC police confirms it's arrested approximately 95 protesters today so far. Things getting tense here at 13th and K.
Earlier this afternoon, several hundred people stepped onto the busiest freeway in the city and brought traffic to a halt.
They're holding signs that read, "No hope, stop fascism," and U.S. satellite of Russia. And these demonstrators around 1 o'clock this afternoon didn't just take to the streets. They took to the freeways, the I-695, 395, southeast-southwest freeway, and they actually marched westbound from near the 11th Street Bridge past the 3rd Street Tunnel, getting off the freeway onto Independence Avenue by way of the 12th Street Expressway. And for nearly half an hour, all westbound traffic was stopped, had it in park on the freeway, Washington's busiest road.
Other nonviolent protests in DuPont Circle, as demonstrators say they hoped taking the high road will make for a more persuasive argument.
The line stretched half a mile up Massachusetts Avenue, people waiting for a free marijuana cigarette. Organizer Adam Eidinger and others were standing in a jail cell on wheels, giving out joints to people over 21.
I wouldn't say it's an anti-Trump event. It's more like do the right thing. I mean, he has said for years that he's for legalization, he's for ending the drug war, he's for medical marijuana. Then do it.
Even though it's illegal to smoke in public, it was clear some were willing to engage in an act of civil disobedience. Neil Augenstein, WTOP News.
Is Brennan Hazelton.
And a very good Saturday evening to you. Thousands of protesters taking part in the Women's March are now making their way past the White House. The march going ahead after being briefly canceled because more people showed up than expected. As a result, marchers are taking a different route up Constitution Avenue. Now, the big rally has had celebrities, activists, and politicians taking their turn speaking.
Immigration rights. For reproductive rights, for LGBTQ rights, we have to stand up to fight climate change.
That's D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, who says the best thing the federal government, led by President Trump, can do is leave us alone. Meantime, a whole lot of marchers have started making their way home on the subway. WTOP's Max Smith says Metro hopes folks downtown will hang out for a while to spread out the crowds.
Massive crowds just keep coming here at Metro Center. Some lines at fare gates, and then everybody gets through and let down onto the platform when a train comes through. But then you just wait even longer. The line's 6, 7, 12 people deep as you get to the center of the platform. Both Metro and MARC adding some extra trains, but still all the trains are packed tight, standing room only at Metro Center. Max Smith, WTOP News.
Now, while most of those taking part in today's march are women, there are plenty of men on hand, too.
Eli Back is attending the Women's March on Washington in support of the women in his life.
I know a lot of powerful women.
Between the signs and the chants, the event is a pro-women's rights event, pro-reproductive rights, and also very anti-President Trump. Karen Smith from Bowie says she's here to voice her opinion and to feel empowered.
I'm not a fan of our president.
She says she doesn't like the political climate right now.
I feel as though that it's time for everybody, not just women, just to speak up against it.
And specifically?
The Planned Parenthood. Black Lives Matter.
In Southwest, Kathy Stewart, WTOP News.
Also, amid the sea of women's rights demonstrators jamming the streets of the nation's capital, Bikers for Trump held a small celebration in a park off Pennsylvania Avenue.
A small group of bikers and their families gathered together hoisting their pro-Trump signs, jubilant over the transfer of power at the White House.
Trump loves women. He loves women.
Biker for Trump R.C. Pittman of Pensacola, Florida, saluted the masses of women marching by.
We've opened our hearts up to the women. Bikers don't believe that women ought to be beat on. We believe they ought to be loved on.
Some of the women's rights marchers exchanged friendly greetings with the bikers. Some demonstrators confronted the bikers with anti-Trump signs and taunts. In Northwest D.C., Dick Uliano, WTOP News.
Keep it right here for the latest on today's march throughout the evening. It's 5:07.
A Montgomery County father says for decades he tried to do everything in his power to save his son, but he underestimated the power of opioid addiction. WTOP's Jamie Forzato continues our series, Hooked on Heroin, Deadlier Than Ever.
Parents are clueless. The kids know so much more than the parents do. The parents are in denial and they don't want to think that this could happen to them.
Don Wood warns that any family can find themselves fighting addiction.
It was a spiral downward. It's just that he was so functional that we didn't know it.
His son and namesake, Donnie Wood III, had struggled with anxiety and depression in high school and eventually turned to prescription painkillers. Don and his wife helped their son through two rounds of short-term drug rehab. They let him move in with them. They kicked him out. They supported him financially into his early 30s. They gave him ultimatums, but nothing worked. One morning, their 32-year-old son didn't answer the phone, or text messages, or emails. A father's intuition started settling in.
And I started to panic.
He drove over to the sober living house where Donnie was staying.
I made sure that I knew. I made sure I knew the street name correctly and the house number. Because I really believed, I was going to be calling 911. I never suspected he would be dead.
When he entered his son's room, it appeared empty.
I said, thank God he's not here. And then I took one more step in, and then there he was, lying face down. And he had been dead 14 hours.
His body was stiff and cold. He had overdosed on tramadol, a synthetic opioid painkiller.
When I put my hand on him, I put my hand on his back, and I felt this tremendous sense of relief, just tremendous sense that he's at peace, we're all at peace. And that lasted for a brief second, but it happened, and I just felt it wasn't him. He's not there. He's somewhere else.
Of course, that moment was immediately followed by an overwhelming sense of grief that continues to this day. He says being a parent of a child with substance abuse disorder can be confusing and lonely.
You want to help because you're the parent. You want to help fix this. They're your child. You brought them into the world. You're responsible for them. I mean, and you've raised them since little babies. So you want to fix this.
Looking back, he said they should have sought professional help earlier when Donnie was in middle and high school.
And it is just brutal for parents as you go through this because you know in the back of your mind that you're making life and death decisions that by doing something, by not doing something.
And Don Wood is not alone. In my next report, law enforcement officials are changing the way they approach drug education in schools. Jamie Forzato, WTOP News.
You can hear Jamie's next report half an hour from now.
Wow, so powerful.
Here are Mark Lewis and Deborah Feinstein.
Good morning. The hard-fought Virginia governor's race is now over. Democrat Ralph Northam will lead the state for the next 4 years.
Hello, Virginia. Wow, what a day in the Commonwealth.
Northam led a Democratic sweep of the state's top offices, helped by a strong performance in Northern Virginia. He won nearly 60% of votes in Loudoun County and had more than 60% of the votes in Prince William County.
And our team coverage this morning begins with WTOP's Dick Giuliano with the Northam campaign.
Democratic Party and elected leaders took the stage one by one to toast their sweeping victory.
Thank you, Virginia!
How sweet it is! Wow!
In his victory remarks, Governor-elect Ralph Northam, a pediatric neurologist, said it would take a doctor to heal Virginia following the bitter campaign.
We need to close the wounds that divide and bring unity to Virginia.
Democrats say the Virginia election results are the match that will spark progressive change across the nation. With the Northam campaign in Fairfax, Dick Giuliano, WTOP News.
I'm Michelle Bash in Richmond with Republican Ed Gillespie.
I felt called to serve. I hope God will discern what his calling is for me next.
He says whatever that may be, his wife Kathy will be by his side. Although disappointed, Gillespie thanked staffers and supporters and said he called Governor-elect Northam to wish him well and offer any help he may need. In Richmond, Michelle Bash, WTOP News.
Well, one candidate made history as the first ever openly transgender elected official in Virginia.
Her opponent had sponsored Virginia's version of the so-called bathroom bill. But Democrat Danica Rome tells NBC4 she won on the issue of transportation.
We focused on a message that resonated with the people of the 13th District, and I'm dead serious about it, about fixing Route 28.
That district includes parts of Prince William County and Manassas Park. Rome unseated Republican delegate Bob Marshall, one of the state's longest-serving and most socially conservative lawmakers. He refused to debate Rome and referred to her using male pronouns. John Aaron, WTOP News.
Court documents say a former school aide kept abusing children while evidence against him sat in storage. A WTOP investigation finds the reason behind the delay in charging Carlos Bell in Maryland is a lack of manpower.
Fewer than 24 people are working to process digital evidence in the entire state. Our investigation continues with WTOP's Megan Clardy.
Just 17 people in Maryland are working to review thousands of cell phones, tablets, and computers linked to nearly every crime in the state.
You know, they're connected to homicides, to terrorism, to child endangerment. It runs the gamut.
Greg Shipley with Maryland State Police says there are 4 digital analysts processing roughly 15 cases a month for 20 counties. The lab is facing a 10-month backlog.
This cannot just be assigned to the Maryland State Police alone. We have the Maryland State Police and about 4 other police departments in the state who have a computer forensics lab. We need the involvement of more police departments.
5 analysts are working in Montgomery County, which has the largest team of any lab in the state. Prince George's County has the smallest, but all have a queue of cases they cannot get to fast enough. The backlog had real consequences for Charles County families when it took months for investigators to analyze evidence they later used to charge former teacher's aide Carlos Bell with sexual crimes against children. During those months, court documents show he exploited 3 other kids, including potentially infecting a teenager with HIV.
It's never acceptable. It's never something that we should ever become complacent to or reactionary to.
Mike Bellis runs the United Way of Charles County, where Bell lives.
I hope this is an opportunity for us to kind of dissect the failure and fix it in the future.
Backlogs are very common.
Sean Goodison would know. He authored a report on the challenges facing digital crime labs across the country for the Police Executive Research Forum. Goodison says depending on the number of devices, one case can take months to complete.
It is a sea of information, and police are typically looking for one specific cup of water.
He says training is needed early and often, and adequate funding to hire analysts is necessary. Otherwise, evidence backlogs will continue to delay justice. Megan Clougherty, WTOP News.
It is 10:11 now. The U.S. intelligence community has concluded that Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered an operation to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. A WTOP investigation that began in November of 2016 examined how the attack happened, when it started, who was involved, and what lay ahead. WTOP's national security correspondent J.J. Green sets the scene in part 1 of his series, Anatomy of a Russian Attack.
On January 10, 2017, Director of National Intelligence Jim Clapper revealed Russia had attacked the U.S.
We have high confidence that President Putin ordered an influence campaign in 2016 aimed at the U.S. presidential election.
President Barack Obama knew something was afoot in September 2016, and he had some words with Vladimir Putin.
Cut it out, and there were going to be some serious consequences if he didn't.
CIA director at the time, John Brennan, warned his counterpart, Alexander Bortnikov, to stop the meddling.
Mr. Bortnikov denied that Russia was doing anything to influence our presidential election.
But according to a high-confidence, unanimous assessment from the entire intelligence community, Russia was interfering. The list of targets was extensive.
People and organizations associated with the 2016 U.S. presidential election, including both major U.S. political parties.
Republican Senator Marco Rubio was one of those targeted.
In July of 2016, shortly after I announced that I would seek re-election to the United States Senate, former members of my presidential campaign team who had access to the internal information of my presidential campaign were targeted by IP addresses with an unknown location within Russia.
And on November 8th, after the election results were in, Vladimir Zhirinovsky, a Russian politician, celebrated with champagne. And intelligence sources say other Russian government and intelligence officials in intercepted conversations congratulated each other for achieving something they had tried unsuccessfully to do during the entire Cold War. And coming up in my next report, how did they do it?
They have an extremely capable intelligence service with exceptional cyber capabilities that they have repeatedly demonstrated.
And it all happened right in plain sight on the National Mall. J.J. Green, WTOP News.
You can read and listen more about this series at WTOP.com. Search National Security.
Well, it didn't look good at first for the Caps last night. They were down 2-0 early in the first playoff game, but the team certainly came back. They beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 3-2 in overtime. Fans were thrilled.
Let's go, Caps!
It was exhilarating. Was that an awesome game or what?
It was intoxicating.
It was wonderful at the end.
It was intense.
For many fans, overtime is hard to handle.
Always, yes. You know, I've been trying to keep my blood pressure under control.
Others can't get enough.
You like being on edge like this?
Oh my goodness, yes. My legs hurt from standing up too much.
With fans outside Verizon Center, Michelle Bash.
Wilson!
WTOP News.
Oh man.
The Redskins are out west doing battle against the Rams, and after one half of play, so far so good. WTOP's George Wallace is in Los Angeles as well and has more now in a live report from the Coliseum.
All right, Robbie, 167 yards in that first half, rushing the football for the Redskins, most since 2010 and a half. 20-10 Redskins with the lead. Chris Thompson, 3 carries, 77 yards and 2 touchdowns. He took one to the house just right before the half, 61 yards. Kirk Cousins, 9 of 15, 81 yards in that first half.
The Nationals' shiny new spring training facility in West Palm Beach is now open to the public. Fans took advantage by watching practice yesterday, and WTOP's Jonathan Warner is there too.
The reviews are in, and like Tony from Annandale, they're all favorable.
We've been down to Vieira 2 other times. Yeah, that was nice.
It's a little nicer?
A little nicer. Restaurants are nicer. Beach is nicer. Yeah, facility is amazing.
How do you think they're going to do this year?
They're going to do great. All the way.
Did you say that last year?
Yeah.
But it's different this year.
Different this year.
Jubilant after Saturday's thrilling win over the Cubs, Nationals fans like the team's chances today with Max Scherzer pitching.
Oh my God, with Scherzer and this win behind them and the guys finally hitting, I think we're going to be okay.
I'll take my chances with Max starting the next game.
Fans have a simple formula for the Nats to push deeper into October.
They got to get hits and they got to keep up the good pitching.
Dick Uliano, WTOP News.
What a great time.
Today on Core Values, Chris is a little tired of hearing one newly popular term.
The term fake news seems to have entered our vocabulary just this year. First of all, there is no such thing as fake news. There's news, an accounting of events, and then there are lies, mistakes, rumors, and urban legends. They've always been around. When I was in college, we all knew Paul McCartney had died because it said so if you played a certain Beatles song backwards. Today, with the internet, these myths spread more quickly. And then there's the term alternative facts. No such thing. There are facts, and then there's everything else. Non-facts, untruths, nonsense. One way we check facts is by knowing the news. You see how this works? So, is there terrorism and rioting going on in Sweden, for example? Let's check with Sweden to find out. That's called reporting, and it's how we get news, which gives us the facts. Okay, everybody got that straight? Especially those of you living and working in the 1600 block of Pennsylvania Avenue? Because keeping it real, factual, and accurate is a core value.
That journalism lesson brought to you by Chris Core, part of commentary and analysis from all sides.
Good afternoon. We continue with our coverage of the shooting this morning in Alexandria. It was supposed to be a fun baseball practice for some members of Congress, but instead it turned into a bloody crime scene as a man with a rifle appeared and began firing. Our continuing team coverage goes on now with WTOP's Brennan Hazelton.
Bruce, it was a little after 7 a.m. that Alexandria police got the call of shots being fired at one of the Simpson ball fields in the city's Del Rey neighborhood. House Majority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana, playing second base, was shot in the hip. Two Capitol Police officers, a lobbyist, and a legislative aide were also hit. Arizona Senator Jeff Flake watched it all happen.
Steve dragged himself about 15 yards off of the near second base onto the field. but was laying motionless out there. But I couldn't get to him until the shooting stopped.
Now, Scalise went into surgery shortly after the shooting. We are told that surgery went fine and that he is going to be okay. The Capitol Police Chief also says his two officers who were hit are in good condition with non-life-threatening injuries. Now, the conditions of the other two victims is unclear at this point. The sound of gunfire also sent parents scrambling to protect their kids this morning. We get that part of the story from WTOP's Nick Iannelli.
It's way too close to home. This is too close to home.
In the moments following the shooting, schools in the area were locked down, and parents taking their kids to class had to rush them in. This mother was among those parents.
There were teachers on the sidewalks at all points of entry, and they were waiting for arrivals so that they could get them into the building really fast.
She says she drove up to that building and literally shoved her two kids in. A very distressing moment, but she says it did give her some peace of mind that they were safe inside the locked down school. In Alexandria, Nick Iannelli, WTOP News.
We have gotten word that the legislative aide who was shot this morning is doing well and is expected to be okay. So that is good news. The suspect died from his injuries. He's been identified by police as 66-year-old James Hodgkinson, a home inspector from Belleville, Illinois, though his wife tells ABC News that Hodgkinson has been living in Alexandria for the past 2 months. The FBI has taken the lead on the shooting investigation and says it is too early to say what the motive here might be. Another congressman says he believes he had an interaction with Hodgkinson in the parking lot of the baseball field before the shooting happened, and that Hodgkinson asked him whether it was Republicans or Democrats who were playing out on the field. Now, this was a practice for tomorrow night's charity baseball game between Republican and Democratic members of Congress. That game at Nats Park will go on as planned. Reporting live, Brendan Hazelton, WTOP News.
Much more to come on today's breaking development. Stay with us here on WTOP. Traffic and weather on the way next. It's 107.
Traffic and weather on the 8s and when it breaks.
Right now, if you're traveling on the Beltway, the outer loop of the Beltway in Virginia, delays are coming from the Dulles Toll Road and off the toll road around toward I-66. Before I-66, they were moving everything over to the shoulder. There had been a fluid spill cleanup going on there along the right side. Also seeing some volume coming from Route 7 onto the outer loop to join that delay. Now, if you're on 66 inside the Beltway, eastbound, the delays are solid heading in through Arlington. You're going to find eastbound after Glebe Road before 29 and Spout Run Parkway. The right lane was getting by the crash. In Virginia, northbound 95 had the delays from Dale City into Woodbridge. It was near the Dale City exit. The work was in the right lane. Then after you crossed the Occoquan, it was slow through Lorton and Newington before the Fairfax County Parkway. Everything was moved over to the shoulder. The closures in the Delray area of Alexandria remain around the area of Simpson Field for the ongoing investigation. This is East Monroe Avenue closed between Route 1 and Mount Vernon Avenue. Also around the field, DeWitt Avenue, East Duncan, East Mason, and Leslie Avenues all shut down. Route 1 is open. Mount Vernon Avenue is open, but still a good idea to avoid the area. In the district on the Southeast Southwest Freeway, eastbound at the Potomac Park exit after the split with Lower 14th Street, the crash had been in the center of the roadway. Delays on the eastbound freeway, actually on northbound 395 near the Pentagon across the 14th Street Bridge onto the freeway. Westbound freeway starting to slow with some rubbernecking, and the southbound George Washington Parkway is also heavy approaching the scene. Silver Diner, their flexitarian menu features vegan, gluten-free, and lower-calorie entrees, along with classic diner favorites, silverdiner.com. I'm Rita Kessler, WTOP Traffic.
Low 90s for highs this afternoon and muggy as well, with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Storms that develop could be slow-moving, and that could lead to some flash flooding and some ponding of water on area roads, which could slow down the evening commute. Overnight tonight, we dry out with lows in the 60s and mainly cloudy and mainly dry tomorrow. Only a small chance for a shower, maybe an isolated storm. Cooler tomorrow with diminishing humidity as well. Highs for your Thursday in the low 80s. I'm Storm Team 4 meteorologist Amelia Draper.
Hazy sunshine. It's 84 right now in Northwest Washington, 87 in Frederick, Maryland, and in Fredericksburg, Virginia, 89 at Reagan National and 86 at BWI Marshall. On our way to about 90.
It is 1:10 now, and we continue to follow developments in today's shooting in Alexandria at a practice for the congressional baseball game by Republican players. At least five people shot, including Louisiana Republican Congressman Steve Scalise and two Capitol Police officers. Scalise now out of surgery. Conditions of the other victims are not perfectly clear, but they should, as far as we know, all be okay. The shooter, 66-year-old James Hodgkinson of Belleville, Illinois, is said to be dead.
Joining us live now in the studio, WTOP National Security Correspondent J.J. Green. J.J., what more are we learning about the shooter as this investigation goes full steam now?
Well, there's not a heck of a lot more at this point than has been reported in the last hour or so, with the exception of the fact that it's believed the shooter was deceased at about 9:16 this morning at the hospital. And this piece of information has just come in. One or two of the people that were leaving the baseball practice, the practice this morning, actually noticed this individual asking who was practicing, if it was the Democrats or Republicans. And then subsequently, I'm told local police got a phone call and responded, which may explain why they were able to get there so quickly. And it's not entirely clear at this point who actually killed the gunman. It may have been Alexandria police because they responded so quickly because someone did see something and say something. So that's the only other information that I've been able to determine regarding the suspect at this point, is that he may have been killed by Alexandria police as they arrived on the scene to the situation.
Even though he asked who was on the field, I guess it's not 100% clear what his motive was, although certainly people will ascribe certain intentions.
Short of being very, very detailed about the motive, authorities believe it was very clear to shoot and to maim and kill members of Congress or whomever was there today with them in that scene. If this is what I'm hearing, if indeed the information they were getting is correct about what it was that he was asking. At this point, there's still a lot of investigating to do. They're looking at search warrants for cars and homes and things like that right now.
We're seeing some reports about his background, some run-ins with the law. Is there anything that you've been hearing thus far that would indicate a reason to be in this area and a reason to do this kind of act?
The sources that I've spoken to this morning indicate that this individual had been in the region for a couple of months, at least as a resident in Alexandria, and that he had some very significant political ties to a political candidate and was very active. Some of what investigators are already also finding out is that he seemed to be pretty adamant about his views, and he certainly had acquired weapons. An important fact to note here is that he did not appear to be on anyone's radar and was moving stealthily through the community. But it's pretty clear to authorities that they were dealing with someone who had some serious issues with politics. And the thing that they're concerned mostly about today is if there is retaliation for this or copycatting of this today.
Is that why it stepped up security at the Capitol and other locations around the city?
That's a part of it. Earlier today, the North Fence line was closed at the White House. Part of Lafayette Park was closed. But I'm told those locations are open again, back to normal. But there are some circumstances where an increase in security posture may be noticed around the Capitol area today.
Now, today, are you thinking or are you hearing anything about any long-term plans, any long-term changes to security protocols?
I have heard about that. And the one thing I can tell you that I've heard definitively today from a number of sources is it would be expensive to do ramped up security heretofore because of what's necessary, the person power, people power, the actual economics of doing it would be prohibitive for all of those that might need that kind of security. Only 10 members of Congress get this advanced or enhanced security. There are hundreds more.
The senior members, right.
Exactly. There are hundreds more who now may feel as though they need this because of this situation. And I'm told that this simply is just cost prohibitive.
WTOP's National Security Correspondent J.J. Green. Thank you, J.J.
You're welcome.
Let's get caught up on the action on Wall Street today. Here's Jeff Claybaugh.
The Dow is up 13 points. Money news in 10 minutes on WTOP.
Sports at 15 and 45. Fed by Papa John's. Better ingredients, better pizza.
And we go to Dave Preston.
And the Nationals wrap up their homestand this afternoon. Bruce Ryan, Zimmerman returning to the lineup last night, homering twice in a win over Atlanta. Zim and company finished their series with the Braves today. Zim, happy that he was able to take a couple days off to rest his injured back.
You know, the depth on our bench gives us the ability to do that with a lot of people. I think, Adam Lind is an unbelievable hitter and gives me the opportunity to take 2 or 3 days off, and we don't lose much over there. And got like Stephen Drew and just guys who have done it before.
Tanner Roark on the mound for the 4:05 start this afternoon on 1500 AM. Orioles are under 500 for the first time all season, thanks to a rotation that is boasting an ERA of 14.73. During the current six-game losing streak, Birds battle the Chicago White Sox again tonight. NFL Redskins running back Matt Jones may be at mandatory minicamp this week, but his agent has asked the team to release the third-year player. The 24-year-old was expected to be the primary ball carrier last year, but had fumbling issues and played in just 7 games. Soccer DC United advances to the round of 16 in the U.S. Open Cup, edging amateur club Christos FC last night 4-1. Some great pictures and a story on the sports page at WTOP.com. Women's college basketball. Georgetown reportedly set to promote assistant James Howard to head coach. Hoyas losing Natasha Adair to Delaware last month. She's the new head coach for the Blue Hens. Tomorrow's congressional baseball game at Nationals Park will be played. Dave Preston, WTOP Sports.
Thank you, sir. It's 1:17. Guys don't really. WTOP at 1:18.
Traffic and weather on the 8s and when it breaks.
Problems in Virginia on I-66. First eastbound inside the Beltway. The delays in Arlington headed past Glebe Road. And before 29 Spout Run, you were staying to the right to get by the crash. Westbound to 66 before 123. It was a report of a wreck. A vehicle off the roadway. Watch for response showing up to the scene. 95 in Virginia. Northbound heavy after Dale City into Woodbridge. Then after you cross the Occoquan, you're slow again through Lorton and Newington. It was before the Fairfax County Parkway. The accident activity was moved over to the shoulder. Northbound 395, seeing the delays after Washington Boulevard, headed across the 14th Street Bridge onto the Southeast-Southwest Freeway. After the split with lower 14th Street near the park, the Potomac Park exit, the accident activity reported in the center of the roadway. The westbound freeway was seeing some rubber-necking delays. Also delays on DC 295 in both directions. Northbound near Pennsylvania Avenue toward Benning Road. Southbound slows from Benning Road past the East Capitol Street. Back in Virginia, in Alexandria, the closures remain in place around Simpson Field for the ongoing investigation. East Monroe Avenue closed between Route 1 and Mount Vernon Avenue. The roads around the field closed as well, including DeWitt Avenue, East Duncan Avenue, East Mason Avenue, and Leslie Avenue. They still want you to avoid the area if you can. If not, just know that Route 1 is open. Mount Vernon Avenue also is open, and the lanes are available to you. In Maryland, southbound 210 before Old Fort Road North, the crash had been along the right side. Keep your vehicle road ready with the value and convenience of Jiffy Lube Signature Service Oil Change and Tire Rotation, plus brakes and light engine repair at participating locations. I'm Rita Kessler, WTOP Traffic.
And over to Storm Team 4's Amelia Draper with our four-day forecast.
Right now on Storm Team 4 radar, I'm tracking some thunderstorms across the area, but these mainly back around the I-1 corridor, well to the west and south of Washington, continuing to track thunderstorms developing in Madison County and then back around the Luray area and into Rockingham County. These actually moving toward the south, and they're very slow moving with some heavy rainfall. So we could see some ponding of water on roads in those locations, areas like I-1. But in the immediate metro area, we're still dry. It's muggy and it's warm. Temperatures this afternoon in the upper 80s to low 90s. We'll have some scattered showers and thunderstorms around for the afternoon and evening hours, especially in Virginia and parts of West Virginia. And again, any storms could have some heavy rainfall and be slow moving, so something we'll keep an eye on. Overnight lows in the 60s. The skies remain cloudy and then plenty of clouds around tomorrow, but more comfortable. We're cooler and less humid. Highs tomorrow in the low 80s. Low to mid 80s for your Friday with the chance for some scattered showers, but again, looking mainly dry. Saturday, the humidity is back as well as the heat. Upper 80s with a chance for some scattered showers and thunderstorms mainly later in the day. Right now, we're still holding at 89 outside of our studios here in Northwest Washington. 91 degrees in Mount Vernon and Frederick at 88.
Thanks, Amelia. It is 84 degrees outside the Glass and Close Nerve Center. Brought to you by Len the Plumber. Trusted same-day service 7 days a week.
1:22, the latest on the shooting this morning in Alexandria now.
CBS News Special Report, Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise is now out of surgery. He was shot in the hip when a gunman opened fire at Republican lawmakers and staffers at softball practice in Alexandria, Virginia this morning before a charity game at Nationals Ballpark tomorrow. Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi.
So tomorrow we'll go out on the field, we'll root for our team, we'll want everyone to do his or her very best, and we will use this occasion as one that brings us together.
Law enforcement sources identify that suspected gunman as 66-year-old James Hodgkinson of Belleville, Illinois. Justice and Homeland Security correspondent Jeff Pegase has more on Hodgkinson.
There were some anti-Trump postings on his Facebook. Quote, Trump is a traitor. He has destroyed our democracy. Quote, it's time to destroy Trump and co.
Hodgkinson has died from his injuries after police returned fire. CBS News Special Report, I'm Steve Dorsey.
Now, there are more details about the gunman emerging. Speaking on the Senate floor today, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says he was disgusted to learn that James Hodgkinson, the shooter, had volunteered on his presidential campaign.
I am sickened by this despicable act, and let me be as clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms.
Sanders praised Capitol Police for their response and says his prayers are with House Majority Whip Steve Scalise and the others who were hurt.
Tennessee Republican Chuck Fleischmann says members scattered when they first heard the shots fired this morning in Alexandria.
Unfortunately, when we got to the dugout, we realized we were still under attack, the shots were still coming. The Capitol Police, fortunately, were there because of our whip, Steve Scalise. They returned fire. They probably saved our lives and the lives of a lot of other people because we were all sitting ducks.
Fleischmann was not among those injured.
More to come in our continuing coverage here on WTOP. And up next in your money.
Wall Street's not moving much. We'll find out if the Fed has agreed to a rate hike in a half an hour. I'm Jeff Claybaugh.
It's 1:24.
Ready to up your fashion?
Lowest price.
Your money at 25 and 55 on WTOP.
1:25 now, over to Jeff Claybaugh.
35 minutes till the Fed lets us know what it decided about interest rates. This time around, a rate hike is expected. Traders will be looking for hints about how many more to expect this year. The Dow is up just 8 points. The S&P 500 index is down just a point. Retail sales fell by the most in nearly a year and a half last month. Consumer prices also fell down 0.1%. A drop in inflation was not expected. More shakeup at Uber. Board member David Bonderman has resigned after sexist remarks during a staff meeting. Bonderman was recorded as saying adding women to the board would only mean more talking. Uber CEO Travis Kalanick took a leave of absence yesterday. Mortgage rates, the lowest they've been this year, and more homeowners want to refinance. The Mortgage Bankers Association says applications to refinance an existing mortgage jumped another 9% last week. Jeff Claybaugh, WTOP Money.
Everything in its place perfectly.
It's 1:28.
Traffic and weather on the 8s and when it breaks.
Updating the situation in the district. This is the eastbound southeast southwest freeway at the Potomac Park exit after the split with lower 14th Street. The crash in the right lane. Right now, your delays are on northbound 395 near Route 1 in Crystal City. If you're on the westbound freeway, the delay is before the Case Bridge, headed toward the 14th Street Bridge. Outbound on the 14th Street Bridge, mid-span on the bridge, the crash reported in the right lane. Major delays in Virginia on 66 inside the Beltway. It is eastbound after Glebe Road, just before the Lee Highway exit. The accident activity, you are staying to the far right side to get by. Westbound is seeing a rubbernecking delay trying to head toward the scene, basically coming from the Roosevelt Bridge, trying to head past the scene of the crash. The outer loop of the Beltway in Virginia still seeing the volume in Tysons headed toward I-66. It was the spill cleanup along the right side. The 2017 Cadillac XT5 crossover comes with an adjustable rear sliding seat for more cargo room or leg room. Now at your Washington, D.C. area Cadillac dealer. I'm Rita Kessler, WTOP Traffic.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms will impact the area during the afternoon and evening hours. Storms could be on the strong to severe side, with the biggest concern being some very heavy rainfall that could lead to some ponding of water on area roads. Afternoon temperatures in the low 90s and overnight lows in the 60s. Mainly cloudy tomorrow with a chance for an isolated shower or thunderstorm, but most of the day looking dry and diminishing humidity. Highs tomorrow in the low 80s. Low to mid 80s on Friday with a chance for some scattered showers. I'm Storm Team 4 meteorologist Amelia Draper.
89 degrees right now at Reagan National, 87 at Dulles, and 87 degrees in Northwest outside the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center.
From Richmond to Baltimore, from the Chesapeake to the Shenandoah, this is WTOP, Washington's top news, on air and online at WTOP.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Mark Lewis.
And I'm Bruce Allen. We have Judy Taub at the editor's desk. Coming up,
we continue following developments in a shooting at a Republican baseball practice for the congressional baseball game that happened in Delray, a neighborhood in Alexandria.
Five people shot. The shooter was killed. The injured included House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, now out of surgery and doing well, and two congressional police officers.
President Trump calling for unity, and congressional leaders are vowing tomorrow night's game will go on as scheduled.
We'll get more from the Hill with WTOP's Capitol Hill correspondent Dave McConnell.
Wall Street is mixed with the Dow up 17, NASDAQ up a point, the S&P down one.
It's 1:31. CBS News Special Report.
Shots being fired and there are people running, possibly victims involved.
Five people were shot by a man with an assault rifle at a congressional baseball practice just after 7 a.m. today in Alexandria, Virginia. Congressman Steve Scalise was wounded in the hip and is recovering from surgery. He's in stable condition. Speaker Paul Ryan spoke to colleagues on the House floor.
We are all horrified by this dreadful attack.
The suspect was shot by two Capitol Police officers providing security for Steve Scalise. The attacker has died. Jeff Pegues.
This suspect, James T. Hodgkinson from Belleville, Illinois, 66 years old, left a trail of information for investigators on his social media.
On his Facebook page, this posting.
Quote, it's time to destroy Trump and co.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
I am sickened by this despicable act.
Sanders says the suspect was a volunteer in his campaign. CBS News Special Report, I'm Dave Barrett.
This is Brendan Hazelton. Also on the ball field this morning when shots rang out was Texas Congressman Joe Barton. He choked up as he talked afterwards about the response by police when that shooter opened fire.
Scalise's security detail and the Capitol Hill Police immediately began to return fire, and Alexander police also immediately came and began to return fire. They shot the shooter, and I think the security detail saved a lot of lives because they attacked the shooter.
Also at that practice, Senator Rand Paul, who was taking batting practice in right field, the senator says he took cover when the shooting started behind a tree. Well, WTOP's Capitol Hill correspondent Dave McConnell has also been gathering reaction on the Hill today, and he joins us now live. Dave.
That's right, Brennan. Certainly a day of shock and sadness for the Congress as members reflect on a horrific episode of gun violence as a group of Republicans were practicing for tomorrow night's congressional baseball game. D.C. Congressional Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, a Democrat, insists the violence was in sharp contrast to the basic friendliness and camaraderie members of both parties have for each other most of the time.
Does there need to be greater leadership here in the House and the Senate, so that everyone in the public knows that the partisanship they see on the House floor is not reflective of the way in which members deal with one another the moment we leave the House floor?
Norton also praises the efforts of the Capitol Police officers who offered protection to the lawmakers. On Capitol Hill, Dave McConnell, WTOP News.
Dave, wanted to ask you a quick question. You have covered a number of incidents of violence on the Hill in the past, but how unusual is this that it happened away from Congress? We know, of course, the case of Gabby Giffords being shot in Arizona, but how unusual is this?
It's very unusual because members of Congress in groups are rarely put in these kinds of situations. They were practicing a very peaceful thing, and I have never heard of anything like this happening before. I've covered these games. I broadcast these games. As you know, we do have a little relationship with this thing here at WTOP, and this is very unusual. It is just good that Steve Scalise was a member of the House leadership, and therefore they had extra protection there. But in fact, Congress travels all over the country. Think of any number of stories that we have reported on where members of Congress have been out of the Capitol, have gathered together. Nothing has happened. The Capitol Police always goes with them, and luckily they had some with them today. But this is very, very unusual and something, I hate to say it, new to think about.
All right. Thank you much, Dave. Well, because members of Congress were involved, the FBI is taking the lead on this investigation. More on that from WTOP's Christy King.
Investigators say they have every indication the shooting here in Delray was an isolated incident.
An active investigation. However, the security of the community is a paramount, and I want to reassure you that that's the case.
FBI Special Agent Tim Slater says the gunman's motive is unknown. It's unknown whether the shooting was random or deliberately targeted members of Congress.
We are not sure at this moment. It's still early on in the investigation, and we're working through it.
The two Capitol Hill police officers who were shot during the initial gunfire are said to be in good condition. Also injured in the shooting, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, a congressional staffer and an executive with Tyson Foods. The Capitol Hill officers are part of the department's Dignitary Protection Division. They were at the ball field when all this began at 7:09 in the morning. The charity ball game they were practicing for still is scheduled to go on. In Alexandria, Christy King, WTOP News.
And reporting live, Brennan Hazelton, WTOP News.
And I want to let you know we're also following reports of another shooting, this one in San Francisco. Police say it's playing out at a sprawling UPS warehouse about 2.5 miles from downtown. A UPS spokesman says four people were hurt, conditions unknown. He believes the shooter was an employee who turned the gun on himself.